September 13th, 2009, you're listening to the TeeFormers.com podcast. TeeFormers.com podcast. I'm your host, Iron9975, and I am joined by my ever constant companion in the wide world of sports.
Z-Z-Z-Z-Viper, how you doing?
How you doing? How you doing? Sunday.
Yes, well, it's a bit of a just you and I today. It's like looking around the empty warehouse, and I'm like, where are all of our fine friends? They are nowhere to be found.
Well, one of them is having Ender's having connection issues. We're trying to get him on. If he actually can stay on. He's having some... He's like, can someone program reprogram a DNS? I'm like, yeah, that would be your server guy. So,
right.
So maybe. Let me see. Yeah, he's back on. Let me see if I can bring him in. I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh, that's all right. We'll just have to muddle through and just... we'll just miss the well-informed portion of our podcast. Go with our... Yeah, cantankerous, just, you know, bitching and moaning portion of our podcast.
Speaking of bitching and moaning, man, the amount of stuff talking about Walmart sure exploded in the forums and whatnot.
Oh, I had a chance to go over there lately. Did we spark a bit of a controversy?
Yeah. It's actually, I mean, most people, I would say most people are on our side, but some of our good friends are you sort of like, well, Walmart is, you know, nothing that what other stores don't do and whatnot. And one of our fine listeners, you know, said that their mom unfortunately had to take a job at something, Kmart. And, you know, that, you know, sometimes you do have to take, you know, a job at, you know, one of these places, which is understandable. I mean, you got to pay the bills. It's just that, you know, their practices and their policies seems to just bring in, you know, people that just settle for less. And I think that was the main point you were trying to make at the rant at the end of the show. So.
Oh, yeah. And I also, you know, to address that one thing, I mean, I do realize that other companies, you know, have the bad business practices as well. But it's like if you've got a line of monkeys all throwing poo at you, okay, from small monkeys up to a big monkey, generally you're going to focus on the big monkey because even though they're all throwing poo, he's probably throwing the most.
Right.
That's a really poor analogy, but
the analogy, if you're in the playground, I tied this into Transformers. This think how clever this is. You're in a playground playing with all your friends, Transformers, someone comes around and says, hey, I got a bunch of GoBots, and there'll be 5 GoBots for each one of you if you come play with me over there, and they all go play and you're stuck with your Transformers. You're thinking, but those suck. Why there's more of them, but they suck. So
yeah, I'm not really sure that analogy works for me. Yeah, because I don't really care if somebody says I've got the GoBots master molds and I can crank out as many as you absolutely want. GoBots still suck, dude.
Well, see, that's the problem is that people don't realize when things suck. But anyhow, so you can go check on that wonderful discussion, the TeeFormers.com forums. And once again, to stress that the opinions stressed on the podcast do not represent the TeeFormers.com management, although they probably do.
Is it under the podcast forums that we started that?
Yes, right. Podcast. So go check that when you get a few. Moving on to movie news, though. What little news we have, but we do have some movie news. I love this one. Megan Fox compares Michael Bay to Adolf Hitler.
Okay, for those that didn't understand that, Megan Fox compares Michael Bay to Adolf Hitler.
Yes, Hitler. So Megan Fox starred in the biggest movie of the summer, Michael Bay directed Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, but according to the actress, the director almost killed her and her co-star Shia LaBeouf with his Napoleon to Hitler tendencies. The box office bombshell, well, that's debatable, unleashed on Bay in the interview with Britain's Wonderland magazine in the September-October issue. He wants to be like Hitler on the sets, and he is. So he's like a nightmare to work for. But when you get him away from the set, he's like not in director mode. I kind of really enjoy his personality because he's so awkward, like so hopelessly awkward, Megan continued. He has no social skills at all, and it's endearing to watch him. He's vulnerable and fragile in real life, and then he's on the set, he's a tyrant. Like, according to Michael, according to Megan, Babe pushes his actors to the almost breaking point while filming. Shy and I almost died when we were making the movie, she told the magazine. He has you do some really insane things the insurance will never let you do. It's like so uncool.
I love how your Megan Fox impersonation is simply inserting the word like whenever there should be a comma.
Well, I raised my voice a little bit. Did you hear a little bit of inflection given it to it?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, Rich Little has got nothing on you as far as vocal mastery of impersonation.
I don't think there's anything there that, you know, we're not aware of. I mean, Michael Bay pretty much runs a very tight schedule, and he's pretty much, you know, when he comes on the set, he's ready to roll. And, you know, I would dare say that he stretches the fine line of what OSHA requirements would be. I guess that wouldn't be OSHA, that's Ohio, but, you know, whatever the local laws in terms of safety would be for filming a movie and whatnot.
OSHA's bigger than Ohio, just so you know.
Oh, okay. Well, anyhow, any thoughts on this?
It really, I guess this doesn't surprise me, yeah, because, I mean, really, what are his criteria? You know, boobs and explosions. So, you know, as long as he's got Megan Fox running in terror from huge explosions while her boobs are bouncing, he's probably a happy kid.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of boobs, what a great segue.
Why, yes, I was attempting to do that because for those of you that have not seen it, there's a clip, you know, linked on the T-Former site. For those of you that normally don't watch Robot Chicken, you probably should. But there is another clip that, of course, you know, they've been doing a little more Transformery stuff lately, which is always fun. So the new episode shown this weekend, which was number 17, Cannot Be Erased, features none other than Optimus Prime as the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz. And basically it's, you know, the little nerdy character, you know, with the lisp. Yeah, he falls asleep and realizes that he's in a dream of The Wizard of Oz and wishes everything to be super cool. So he turns the Scarecrow into the crow, which was funny. And then the Tin Man becomes Optimus Prime. The Cowardly Lion becomes Lion-O, of course. And they proceed to do some really inappropriate things and, you know, kick the witch's ass. Which, you know, I really enjoyed it. Again, right up to the point I'm like, man, does everything have to go to toilet humor?
Was toilet humor?
Them peeing on her.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah. So
I mean, other than that, though, but I liked the
your trailer was the thing that disturbed fans in the cartoon the most, but now it's your greatest weapon. I'm like, man, somebody's having a lot of fun with the Masterpiece Prime toy with the show.
Yeah, I mean that was good, and I liked the fact he's like, you know, keep saying thunder, and then he's like, whoa, thunder.
Well, I love there's a couple things. First of all, I think that The whoever's making these things have to be having a ton of fun with this. Plus, one they're animating. I just want to see an animated cartoon with just the toys now, because they actually do a fairly good job of doing the whole transformation scene by scene with the Masterpiece Prime, which is kind of nice to see. If you do it in slow-mo, it's kind of cool. The other thing is that I love the little tribute they did to the supposed rumor of the guy hanging himself in The Wizard of Oz, which, for those of you who don't know, if you look at the scene just before I think they leave the yellow brick road, it's a crow, but on some films where it's not quite clear, it's somewhat a grainy version of the film, it looks like a guy in the background basically hangs himself on the set, and it's not. It's basically just the crow on the mailbox up front. It looks like he stands up on a thing, gets up on it. It's just the way that the crow moves.
See, I don't know, though. I mean, I never really got – I mean, that's definitely an urban legend.
No, I've looked it up. We looked it up back in college numerous times. And if you look at a very – very clear version of it. It's the crow on the mailbox. It's not a guy hanging himself. So it just, the way the crow moves looks very much like the guy gets up and stands up and hangs himself. But it was funny that they pretty much mimicked that. And I'm like, oh, that's a lot of inside joke for true fans of Wizard of Oz. So, because I actually did a lot of research back in the day. I don't want to say I'm a Wizard of Oz buff, but we did have the VHS special edition collection with, you know, 15 pages of extra stuff to read. So, but yeah, I thought the robot chicken seems to be having a lot of fun with that Masterpiece Prime.
Yeah. Yeah. Always fun.
All right. Well, moving on to Revenge of the Fallen hits the $400 million mark in the domestic box office. And it's even more official now. Transformers Revenge of the Fallen has made boatloads of money, guaranteeing a Transformers 3. In case it's exploding, a record-breaking performance in the opening weekend wasn't good enough to give it that right. According to the box office, Mojo Revenge surpassed the $400 million mark on Saturday in the domestic box office. It was its 74th day of release in the theaters. The film still ranks 9th on the unadjusted all-time box office grossing list. Transformers Revenge of the Fallen has made excess of $430 million overseas as of Sunday, giving the film a total of $830.7 million worldwide gross.
That is insane.
So the question is, okay, so here's the question. With the 50-50, I mean, I don't know, I still, was it 50-50 fans liking it, 50-50 people thinking it completely sucked? Do you think the third one is going to be as big, or do you think people who didn't like the second one are going to be like, ah, screw it, I'll wait till it comes on DVD?
I think for the third one, Michael Bay is probably, now this is just the feeling I've had in the force, okay? I have nothing to back this up. I feel that he's probably already in negotiations with the government of Indonesia to buy a few islands of the Indonesian islands that he can completely line with charges and explode up in the next movie.
Well, you know, the next movie they're going to have to throw in like a Fortress Maximus or Metroplex to sort of make up for, you know, the awesomeness. So it's going to – he's going to need –
I mean, as far as we know, he's looking for a volcano to seed, to get an actual volcanic eruption that destroys a local ecosystem and the environment for 200 square miles around for Transformers 3. That's what I feel he's probably going to do. At which point, he's just going to come out and, yeah, he's just going to be like, yoo-hoo, bam, and just that's going to be his whole pitch for the show.
Well, that does bring the question. I mean, what are they going to do for the next movie? I mean, what do you think the next movie's theme is going to be? They're going to have to – it's going to have to be bigger and better. I'm thinking they're going to have to throw in a city former and
– Well, see, this is the thing. I mean, I don't – I really hope that one, I do sincerely hope that the franchise continues in some form or another. You know, like we had to suffer through some really bad Batman movies to get them to realize that this is too iconic of a character to let, you know, a person that directs music videos and, you know, to do this. I mean, God, the one that Arnold Schwarzenegger was in, I don't even see how that was. I don't even see how that was made, but.
Well, that's
whatever.
Joel Schumacher, and he has absolutely right. No clue what he's doing. But that's another.
But I mean, we waited patiently. They rebooted it, and now we have an absolutely amazing franchise that hopefully they won't jack up. You know, I'm hoping that Transformers continues in some fashion in that movie franchise, but I don't want to see this exponential, you know, power slide, because if everything's just bigger and bigger and bigger every time, then it's going to get, in my opinion, pretty terrible. I mean, eventually right. It's going to be like Dragon Ball Z, where they're like, aah! And like the planet explodes. You know, that I would rather settle for a more intimate story that, I don't know, didn't have gaping plot holes, that actually had some good writing and maybe some character development. I don't need Indonesian islands exploding. You know, I don't need them to set off the Ring of Fire and cause a tsunami that wipes out Japan. I don't need these things, right. But I do need some decent writing and some lack of plot holes.
But what, would the theme be, though? I mean, going with what you're sort of giving them – with their pre-established what we have for the movie so far, it's usually featured around Sam, his relationship with the Transformers, and how the Transformers are basically in the relationship to the humans. What would the next theme be? Because, all right, he's already been to college, and that obviously isn't working that well.
Really, if I mean, without you just popping this on me and without me actually being able to think about things pretty heavily, I'd like to see something where it's like, even if we kind of jumped into the movie halfway through a story arc, like, you know, even if it ended up being like a thing where, you know, Star Wars does the flying placard at the beginning, which honestly is kind of a poor device, but regardless, you know, like something I would like to maybe see, like the Decepticons figured something out. And they've mostly won. And like the Transformers, the Autobots, they're kind of in hiding now. You know, they are our despicable rulers, you know, the Decepticons. And it's like, it's kind of like maybe like a Terminator feel where like Sam and the Autobots that are left, they come up with some kind of super weapon or whatever, you know, to eventually drive the Decepticons free. I don't know, but I really just don't want to see more, you know, 5-day per frame ILM rendered, you know, bunch of gray robots beating the hell out of each other in a desert mesa. You know, I don't want more of that. I would like to see, yes, something different, something a little better developed. And for the love of God, you know, I don't want to see Transformers genitalia.
Yeah. Well, so they need to, I don't know, they need to tell Michael Bay to sort of tone down the child humor, but then
dude,
again,
they're not going to. I mean, they're like 830.7 million. He's obviously doing something right from the investor standpoint. So
yeah.
That's what I'm afraid is that he's just like, oh, well, that works so well in the last one. We're actually going to have a Transformer that has boobs in this next one.
Well yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, and she'll have hydraulic systems as well, so that they'll jiggle when she runs. Yeah.
Yeah, let's hope for not that. I don't know. I'm hoping that maybe the writers, you know, maybe if the writers did leave and Michael Bay actually had to deal with a writer that demanded that his stuff appear in film, maybe that might actually force a better movie, but I don't know. So, but speaking
of, man.
Speaking of movies and whatnot, Paramount's second in summer grossing studio list, almost half from Transformers. And so basically the article just goes on to say that between Transformers, Star Trek, G.I. Joe, they basically covered pretty much half of the top grossing during the summer box office season. And the only thing that didn't really help Paramount was the Eddie Murphy comedy of Imagine That, so... But I'm sure they'll make that up in DVDs because Eddie Murphy is all about the kids now.
Yeah, so. I'm glad to see Rise of Cobra made about $140 million, at least in the box office, because, you know, I did like that movie. I mean, we talked about that versus Transformers in a previous podcast, and we don't need to go back into that. But I don't know, $140 million, I don't know how much it costs to actually make it. Hopefully, if it does well in the DVD sales, you know, we'll see another one. I think that might be on the cusp of their break point as far as making another.
I think if anything, they've set up a good storyline, and they could really make the second movie even better. So as long as they don't follow what Michael Bay did. So, but I mean, I think that. But then again, I still don't think Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen was as bad as people make it out to believe. I think.
We won't go back into.
Yeah, I know. It's a tired old argument. So.
Funny thing though on this story is that they talk about Warner Brothers too, and The Hangover only made $25 million less than Harry Potter and the Half Blood Prince, $297.6 million versus $272.2 million.
Wow.
That's saying something. The Hangover making $272 million.
That's gotta be a really good movie. I gotta go see that, I guess.
Yeah, I've not heard a bad thing about it. Those two dudes are probably like partying with the Girls Gone Wild guy, thinking we made money on this.
Yeah. It's like the amount of money they put in all special effects, and that, well, see, that might not be a good thing, because then movie executives go, well, we'll just make stupid comedies and make more money with less, you know, less initial investment, which is not a good thing.
Well, I think that's pretty much anything that Eddie Murphy or the Wayans or Tyler Perry does. I think that fills that niche.
Yeah. Which, speaking of which, I was thinking the other day that you were talking about when our review of G.I. Joe, how the one was Wayne's brother.
Yeah.
Didn't didn't really act too much. I'm like, I didn't even know that was him. And so I guess that's probably a homage to his acting ability, because I didn't realize that was one of the Wayans brothers.
Yeah, I didn't say that, like, it wasn't that he wasn't acting much. I'm saying that he actually, in my opinion, was, you know, acting enough that he wasn't like the usual schlocky character.
It was toned down.
Yeah, it's like and he played the character that he was supposed to play, I thought, relatively well, you know, and enough swag and attitude, you know, but not enough to try to upstage anybody. Right. And I appreciated that, because, like I said, I thought that, yeah, some of the stuff he's been in previously, I thought he was the main reason the movie sucked. So,
well, speaking of movies, why don't you tell us about the upcoming DVD gift set?
Yeah. So Paramount Home Entertainment will be releasing a special gift set that will include both Transformers movies. There will be a 4-disc gift set for Blu-ray and a 2-disc set for DVD. Currently, we don't have any details on whether these discs will include any features not included on the individual releases of the movies. But, you know, we could probably – I mean, anytime they're going to the trouble of doing special packaging or something, I mean, hell, they'll at least drag some obscure character out of scene 34 to do some DVD commentary or something. You know, it's like we had Rubens on this day, and they were pretty good. You know, Michael Bay, he likes his Rubens. So yeah, it was a good time that day. The Blu-ray, what is that? November 3rd, and the DVD version is October 20th.
Yeah, so there's what can be a couple versions of the DVD first, and I'm sure one version will be at Walmart, which will have a disc that you only get at Walmart, and then one version will be at Target, which will only have the information at Target. Just like they did with Transformers 1, where basically you had to go to all 4 stores if you wanted everything you could possibly get.
Yay.
Marketing.
That's one thing I don't like about the big box stores, is because it'd be like, we will give you $20 million if you give us this. And they're like, okay, I would just prefer to have one definitive collection that has absolutely everything.
No, you got to buy all 4. They want you to buy it 4 times.
Yeah,
why would they give you one definitive one? And then when the next movie's about to come out, 2.5 special release.
Oh, we got to remaster it now in Dolby Surround 14.
With extra scenes that everybody wanted in the original one.
So. Yep, exactly.
Anyhow, on to toy news. G2 Megatron repaint for Revenge of the Fallen toy line. And there's a new auction posted by TFC Toy who claims that this is the official prototype repaint. It seems official enough. The toy's in denial. It seems to think it's not for sale. The picture shows a green and black colored Megatron with some paint apps, so it's likely not a test shot.
I don't get it.
Yeah, it's like Megatron went out to a strobe party with lots of you know, bright colored green to glow in the dark or something.
Well, this to me is a really great color scheme for Constructicons.
Yeah.
But for Megatron, I don't.
Maybe somebody forgot to change the color vats for that day.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm not a fan of the, you know, yay repaints anyway, but I mean, at least some of them, however thinly veiled, usually have a purpose. They're like, oh, in episode 23 when he fell into that vat of pink paint. Yeah, well, that's this guy.
Well, we don't know if this is possibly just something that they were considering, and or somebody at the, you know, the plant just got crazy one night and decided to make himself a special, you know, limited edition one. So.
You know, I'm really curious if one could do that. You know, like, oh, I'm the night manager at the plant, and by pressing button A and switching lever B, I've got a glow-in-the-dark Megatron with red laser eyes.
That'd be awesome. You know,
I really don't think it's that easy to just do that. That's it is great, but...
But you figure I don't know either. I mean, I don't know the intricacies of making these toys. You know, that's something we need to find somebody who's actually knows how these toys are made and basically get some insight on that. Because I'm curious on how does a toy go from, okay, this is an engineer designing a toy, which, by the way, the engineers that design these toys are absolutely geniuses still to this day. But how does it go from that to, okay, I have this toy that's fully painted, fully sculpted, intricate details and packaged on a box? That would be a fascinating TV show to watch.
I know how that works. I'm just saying, I just don't think it's as easy to change the color scheme, you know, just to make, your one-off, you know,
right.
Constructicon-colored Megatron toy.
But, I mean, they build special, you know, things that, you know, I mean, do they have to build special machines to put these toys together? Or is it little ladies still putting them together with their fingertips, you know? Because, you know, I worked in manufacturing. They hire, you know, females because females supposedly have dainty fingers, which work better for putting together small pieces and whatnot. You know, I'm curious on how these toys are made, so... So Hasbro.
One would imagine there is probably still a hand assembled portion to a large amount of it, because with the intricacies of how the toy is put together, it would be difficult to have a machine. And I mean, they're just screws, you know, rivets and screws. So yeah, I mean, you make the individual pieces, they fly down a line, and you have one person who's I take this piece, I put it into this piece for 8 hours a day. So there you go. But yeah, I don't know. The color scheme doesn't make sense to me. I think it's a nice color scheme, but not on Megatron.
Right. Okay, moving on. Easy Collection Wave 2 figures reveal new Soundwave and Wheelie modes. And Marinsden. Oh, I'm sorry. You want to read this?
Well, I can't really see it too well. But yeah, it's like Marinsden Toys have updated their site with a listing for the next wave of the Easy Collection toys. And the new wave includes Revenge of the Fallen action figures with a case mix count as follows. You have one battle-damaged Optimus Prime, one battle-damaged Megatron, two Ironhide, one Grindor, two Skids, one Sideways, two Wheelie, and two Soundwave. And the crux of this post is that, you know, you get to see the pictures of a Wheelie and Soundwave. And it's a... You know, it's kind of a collage picture, and you can sort of see, but I don't know, unless there's some bigger pictures somewhere that I missed, it's a little hard to comment because all I can really do is see the basic silhouette of the figures along with the color schemes. I think Wheelie's
looking like Johnny Five.
Yeah, well, I mean, he looked like he was based like that anyway, but his wheels look very poor. You know, like there's no – it's just like a big gray disc. I don't know. It doesn't really do much for me. But I'm not familiar with the Easy Collection toys. Are these a knockoff? Or are these like a smaller line, or what are these?
You know, that's a good question, and I don't want to say anything because I know how picky our fans get if we don't provide. I do know that the Easy ones are making those, the Devastator ones actually transform into individual robots.
Yeah, because the site's in Japanese, and so I really...
I think it is something where they actually have licensing. Let me put that on my to-do list, and I will get back to you on that. So
to get
a little background, what the Easy toys are basically. I think they're from Takara. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it says that they're mostly based on the Legends molds, you know.
It says Marinsden Toys, so they might be a side company making them with proper licensing. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I mean, if they are based on the Legends molds, like, okay, based, but, you know, what's different? What's the same? That's kind of what I'm curious
about. Well, they're simpler and they're smaller is basically the gist of it. But I'll get back to you on that and get you more information. So, all right, so moving on. Tell us about the new Voyager Revenge of the Fallen Optimus Prime repaint, Jace.
Yeah, Jen Zhao has shared an image gallery of a new Transformers Revenge of the Fallen Voyager Optimus Prime. The front of the figure is painted gray with red flames, while the rest of the figure is painted blue. And when you're looking at the robot mode, the poster says it almost looks unfinished, with the figure being predominantly gray. Jen Zhao doesn't know what this figure's for, but assumes that because it's based on the black RC figure, it's a Japanese exclusive of some sort. So, yeah, I agree. Looking at them, the robot mode...
It looks unfinished.
Yeah, the first thing I actually thought is, like, if any of you have ever seen the bodies exhibit that tours around, you know, where they actually do have preserved cadavers, torn apart, and you can see them. That's really what this reminds me of. You know, it's like, you know, you've got kind of like the desiccated flesh gray and the orange and red, and I don't know. Yeah, he looks a little more like an organic fleshless cadaver to me in these pictures, and doesn't really do a lot for me.
Once again, it looks like somebody's reversed, like, part A, coloring A, and coloring B, or left out coloring B and whatnot. It looks like an unpainted, unfinished product, basically. So
I mean, of course, you know, pretty much drab gray would fit with the theme of Transformers 2.
Oh, stop.
Sorry.
Oh, geez. It wasn't that bad. All right, moving on to Wonder. To tell us about the Wonder Festival. Actually, I'll read this because it's short. Wonder Festival exclusive nanoscale G1 Wheelie and Springer and GZI Toys have posted images of the upcoming Wonder Festival exclusive nanoscale G1 Wheelie and Springer figures. These figures are about the same class as Legend Toys are made by Tomy Takara. Despite the size of these little guys, Takara has been able to shove in a triple changer feature for Springer. And these are actually, I'm pretty impressed with these toys. I mean, granted, they're little tiny toys, but for being little, for being what they are, they're pretty well done from what I can tell. I think this was, I think GZI Toys has made some pretty interesting wheelie molds in the past and whatnot. They made their like their own version of Wheelie that was like, if you ever wanted Wheelie to be anything, that's basically what you got. But From what I can see, mine's it looking like it's a little bit more of a prototype mold. It's still pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, for the size, for what you get, it's not bad. I mean, I never really liked the original Wheelie anyway, which begs the question, why did I buy him when I was little? I really, to this day, have no idea. It's like I'd look at him like, why did I buy him? Because he looks like he reminds me of one of those stasis pods that you see in Alien. You know, like they go to sleep in and then, you know, wake up. And I don't know. I mean, he was an annoying character and not an engaging toy, but yet I bought him. So obviously, there must have been some subliminal marketing thing that my young child brain was, wooed by. But Springer, I think, is done relatively well for the size.
Right.
Springer was one of the ones that eluded me back in the day. I never, had a chance to get him. But, at least silhouette-wise, fairly faithful, to that original mold. I mean, obviously, very pared down. And the triple change mold, very simplistic. It's really just a matter of extending the back and, slamming a few pieces together. But, right. For the size, I agree. I think that it's done pretty well.
The forum members say, just note, these are actually by a very talented creator called Gung Boratek, who gets a one-day license from Takara Tomy to sell their Nano Transformers at the Summer Wonder Festival. So, basically, if you don't go there, you don't get them.
Oh, see, now that I can appreciate. Just hearing that, it's just like it's a one-shot deal. They're like, yep, here's your one-day license. Go buck wild. I totally appreciate that because that, one, adds to the collectability of it, and it also keeps, the good stuff is good to have there. But that, it would kind of keep like the crap stuff down, a little bit as well, because it's just like it's an actual license. You go there, you get it done. I appreciate that. That's
well,
nice.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I'm reading more in the forums. The story is few errors is shown with – WST Optimus would make him WST scales, not Legends. Also, GZI Toys produces figures. Most likely, they're given a license from Takara Tomy to produce these nanos for Cell Wonderfest, like they did Power Glide Wheelie Cyclonus kit. It looks like there's a little bit more information, so we'll have to follow up on that next week and to touch base on what that particular story is. But it looks like that this is a one-day shot to get these very limited edition toys. The size of them is yet to be determined, so we'll follow back on that one. So,
right on. Oh, and I have to do the next one because
– do you know what this is about?
I was having a dream, and I was thinking to myself, as far as Optimus Prime collections are concerned – I definitely, I was thinking to myself, two great tastes that taste great together. This is peanut butter cups, beer and pizza, that kind of thing. And I'm thinking to myself, Transformers and Mon Chi Chi.
What is Mon Chi Chi?
You remember it was a stupid cartoon back in the 80s? They were just like little monkeys with afros. And it's like, like something like Mon Chi Chi, Mon Chi Chi, oh, you are so good to me. And they're just stupid little monkeys flying around in the trees having wonderful little monkey adventures.
I must have missed that due to its stupidity.
All right. Well, then for those that aren't familiar with Mon Chi Chi, we'll just insert into that joke two great tastes that taste great together. Jawas. and Optimus Prime.
Oh, okay. Okay, that makes sense now. Yeah.
So thanks to S250, an interesting piece of news hit the wire recently in the form of a transforming version of the Chinese webcomic character Yo-Yo Sisi. The figure's vehicle mode is a super deformed version of the Transformers movie Optimus Prime and transforms into a robot that sports the same color scheme as the Prime 2. The figure has a blade on his left arm and a rifle in his right hand with Yo-Yo Sisi's head. The figure will be produced by TF Club, but there is currently no word on how many will be made, where it will be sold, or how much it will cost. However, when we do find out, we will definitely let you know.
This is now, so messed up, I can't even begin to figure it out.
I guess the same people that enjoy the Disney Transformers.
That's what
you
I'm
know?
Thinking.
Yeah, because I mean, I would imagine in between your Daffy, or not Daffy, your Donald and your Mickey, that this might look comically cutesy out of place.
I don't even know where to begin, Jace. This is like so. This is so weird. Why would anybody? It's like, let's take. I can't even come up with a cliche. Let's take G.I. Joe and put Daffy Duck's face on it.
I mean, but it's a webcomic, so, you know, I mean, it's nothing I've ever read, so I have no clue. However, I do have to say the one redeeming thing about this toy, and this genuinely made me laugh. For those of you that haven't gone to the website, go to the website, pull up the pictures, pull up his vehicle mode, and tell me that the artwork on the side of the cab is not Yo-Yo Sisi donkey punching his girl. From the look of the thing, it looks like her eyes are all crazy and like spinning and whatnot.
I was thinking Powerpuff Girls, but I see what you're saying.
And it's like he's jumping with this extreme expression of joy on his face. We don't see his right hand, so and his arm is going up to the back center of her head, and she's facing away with like googly eyes. So it's like boom, and like donkey punch your girl.
You're terrible. That
to me is hysterical. That made the toy for me. Not enough to want to buy it. You're gonna put that on
starting
the
kids off early.
that's ballsy right there. So even if he's not donkey punching his girl, it still looks like it, and that makes me giggle.
All right. Well, speaking of giggling, actually, there's no way I could transition from that, Jace. So just tell me about the next story, if you would, please.
You know, even though this falls under the realm of yay repaints, in my
redecos
opinion.
Redecos or whatever, remolds.
I like this one.
I do too.
This one is Gintai Ghost Starscream from Million Publishing. So Million Publishing has updated their site with news and images about their next action figures for the Transformers Generation Volume 2 exclusive release, the Gintai Ghost Starscream. The exclusive figure is a redeco for the original Classics / Universe / NKD-02 Starscream mold cast in clear plastic. This is actually the second Ghost Starscream figure to be released. Some of you will remember the eHobby exclusive that was released based on the original Gen 1 figure mold, still quite rare and expensive. This release will only make collecting Ghost Starscream figures all the more interesting. To get one of the figures, you'll need to have bought the Volume 2 book with an order coupon inside to mail away for the figure. By now, you'll probably need to look for an online seller or eBay to get one. And the Ghost Starscream is slated to be released November 2009 in Japan only, which really does make me sad because this is really, you know, I don't like the clear figures that are like totally clear with, you know, one or two, like the Mirage we talked
right.
about.
But they're usually one color. This one's actually mixed clear colors.
Yeah, it's like the actual color scheme, but done in translucent, transparent plastics. And it looks really good.
I know. It looks beautiful.
I mean, this is probably of all of the clear / translucent ones that I've seen, this is probably my favorite so far. And it sucks that, you know, to get it, I couldn't even know how much what these are going to go for on eBay. I don't know how many books were sold and coupons redeemed and whatnot. But yeah, this is one I wish that they would have marketed in more of a widespread release because this This is a good one.
I think this will. I mean, you could put that in the standard, list of toys that they could distribute, and this would sell out like crazy here in the U.S. I mean, who wouldn't want to go Starscream, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this to me, this is really, if they're gonna do clear, crazy ones, that this is more what I'd like to see. Not the stupid Dayglo plastic and, or completely 100% clear where from a distance you can't make out the intricacies of the toy. I enjoy this one a lot.
Yeah, I do too. And that being said, that wraps up our toy news. So unfortunately, Ender is not around, so we're going to have to go through comic news as best we can without our comic in chief here. But needs to say Five of Tales of the Fallen covers by Alex Milne. IDW publisher editor-in-chief Chris Rowles posted 5 of the 6 of the Transformers Revenge of the Fallen Tales of the Fallen comic book miniseries. The movie-verse version of the well-received spotlight feature covers by Alex Milne.
Milne, I guess.
Milne, whatever. Milne. Mr. Ryle says there is an RC cover as well, which is also featured on a couple articles down. But basically, these are kind of interesting and maybe might actually fill in some plot points that the movie left out. So I like the – it's like a – I don't know. How would you explain this? It's sort of
– what, the covers?
Yeah, it's like it's very centered, stylistic,
They look like trading card cover or trading cards to me. Like if they came out with Revenge of the Fallen, just like how Marvel would just come out with random collector sets. That's what this feels like to me. It's an interesting style, though. It almost looks as though, I mean, without really fully knowing, like it's a combination of like ink and gouache.
Yeah.
It might just have all been done on the computer and who knows, but it does at least have a little bit more of a hand-painted feel to them, and I like that. I mean, I think that actually, with the graphic style of all of these, not so much with the actual Fallen. I don't really like that one as much. These would probably look pretty good on, like, little kids' T-shirts.
I know. It's sort of like a – I don't know how to explain it, but it's like a little – or I don't want to say origami, but a centrist logo type. Sort of like these represent the individual characters, and I really like it. It's very, very stylistic, and I really, really like the style behind it. So, the RC cover, if you scroll down to the other story, is actually pretty. It looks like it's covering the RC and then her, I guess, sisters, twins, whatever that would be. So, I'm curious. I might actually have to buy that just so I could get some explanation on what RC's purpose in the movie was.
I guess to just try to throw her in there, and then Michael Bay didn't like her, and so he gave her a missile in the back of the head.
Yeah, thank you, Michael Bay, for once again ruining our childhood.
Thank you, Easter Bunny.
Well, tell us about Simon Furman's updates to his blog, please.
Why, yes, he has updates to his blog. So, prolific Transformers writer Simon Furman has updated his blog some insights into the most recent contribution to the Transformers universe, Tales of the Fallen number 2, hitting shelves, well, by this point, it'll already be on the shelves. So again, go to your local brick-and-mortar comic book store and support them.
Which I have been doing, by the way.
Excellent.
What's funny is just a little side tangent. You walk in the comic book store and it's like very plain, and they got posters on the wall right next to it. It's like a subway with bricks and deco, and I'm just like, wow, sure can tell the difference in who's making money here.
Yeah, sadly, brick and mortar comic book stores usually don't make that much money, so that's why we need to support them so that we don't have to end up going to Walmart for our comic book needs as well.
Exactly.
All right. But basically, the second issue of IDW's Revenge of the Fallen follow-up/prequel series focuses on Sideswipe and his single-minded pursuit of his apparent arch enemy, Demolisher. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to. I'm actually trying to make more an effort to go and actually purchase some comics and whatnot. It's kind of nice to go into the comic book store, grab a comic, sit on the bed, and just chill for a bit,
Absolutely.
Get away from the computer for a bit. So.
Oh, yes.
Next story, if you would please, Mr. Z Piper.
We have the Arc Addendum, which is the Ginrai Interiors. So Jim Sorensen is fresh off from getting married, and he has posted a new Arc Addendum to his blog, The Disciples of Boltax. Interesting name for a blog. He is providing us a nice truck interior of Ginrai while he simply just ran out of room to put this page into his ARC volumes. A small version of the upper interior sketch does show up in ARC 2 of the series. So since Ginrai is a trucker in the United States, the instruments are in English, and the driver's side is on the left, Mr. Sorensen writes. There is also detailing for the sleeper compartment. So, I mean, it's all right. I mean,
Well, I think it's amazing that they put this much detail into figuring out what Optimus Prime would have in his cap. It's kind of cool that the creators actually decided to draw that much detail and whatnot, so.
yeah, I mean, while I agree, but I mean, just I guess just the fact that since I don't know, we're probably never going to really see this in a comic or a toy, and it's just kind of, to me, this is almost just kind of like, fan fluff fiction. I mean, it's good. I'm not saying, it's not bad, but it's just pretty much a standard truck interior.
I know, but it's kind of cool to think that somebody actually put this much time in figuring out the character, Ginrai, which I think, I'm not sure, Power Master Optimus Prime would have this much this much detail. So, I mean, you could work it into some sort of plot, maybe somewhere down the line. I don't know, but
I mean, it's not bad. I mean, it doesn't. I'm not, doing cartwheels. I mean, it's a
No,
drawing of.
no, no. I'm not asking you to do cartwheels. I'm just saying it's kind of cool. That's all. But let's see this, and this is let's see. This is what is this out of again? This is the Arc
The
Addendum.
Archidenton.
So, yeah, I have to say I'm actually thinking I may have to pick up the Arc 2, and let's see what there's the Arc 2, and there's the complete Arc. Just because I really want some nice Transformer coffee table books. So that show, the various pictures and whatnot. So I may have to, you know what, after this, I may, after recording this, I may have to go do some shopping. So we'll see what happens. Moving on to All Hail Megatron number 15, and we have a five-page preview. And check out, you can check that out at tformers.com for a sneak peek at the resurrection of Cup after his murderous crystal addiction. Oh, wow, that's kind of interesting. Interesting subliminal tie-in, and the secret roles that Perceptor Springer and Prowl play in this miraculous recovery.
So now again, I haven't been reading the comics. Cup became a crackhead,
I guess so.
and he went around killing people, and they had to kill him, and now they're bringing him back, and he's not a crackhead.
I'm not sure. The last All Hail Megatron I read was, and I even kept up with any other of the comics except the Spotlight for Metroplex. So I'm not sure, but I did read obviously this 5-page preview, and it looks like Cup got addicted to something and just was having nightmares and stuff, and something with they combined him to make him a pretender or something.
Well,
This
this is definitely something that I want to make a note of. And when we get Ender back, I want to jump back and ask him about this because, drug addiction is a crazy, thing for Transformers to tackle. And I'm really curious about that.
Well, I think it's done well. From if you look at the 5 pages, it's kind of interesting done. And what a interesting, I mean, to of all the people, Cup would be. You figure Cup wouldn't be addicted to stuff, except maybe that cigar he has. But it's kind of an interesting play on maybe. I mean, because crystals, you could say crystals. Like the actual.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm.
Well, and just
It's an interesting concept.
some coked up old Autobot codger going off and, just whacking people in a crazy drug-induced frenzy. I want to know more about that. That's a little weird.
Oh, actually, it's kind of funny here. Okay, because they actually mentioned what they actually mentioned in the last page of show him the footage. Cup actually has a what's that? And Springer goes, "What's that in his mouth? It looks like a cigarette." So I may actually have to go grab this just because I'm darn curious on how this plays out.
That's funny. Yeah, and doing the John Woo thing with both guns blaring with The cigar in his mouth. Yeah, I want to get some more info on this. That's funny.
Okay, I'll make a note of it. And when Ender joins us next week, we can touch base. So that being said, we don't have any reader email. There's obviously some discussions in the forums. But one of the things I asked everybody to do, which, of course, strangely, nobody's here this week, is come up with your favorite Transformer cartoon watching memory. So I regained mine last week of coming home when Transformers Season 2 was debuting. It was a cold winter day and watching Dinobot Island with my Coco, and it was cold outside and just being all nestled up and whatnot. So, Jace, what is your favorite Transformers cartoon watching memory?
Well, I have my favorite and then my least favorite as well, because I remember both extremely well.
Not discounting the death of Optimus Prime.
No, please. That's the trite one, you know, to pick.
Right.
You know, my most favorite was honestly I was sitting, you know, in front of the TV after school, and I had myself, you know, a bowl of Campbell's vegetable soup, as I had my little after-school snack, and I was eating it off of my little folding leg metal ET, the extraterrestrial tray, and I saw I don't remember the name of the episode, but it was the first time they had introduced Devastator, and he combined into, well, Devastator.
Devastator.
You're right. And I just remember, I'm like, oh my God, that's the coolest thing ever. You know, because I was like, I had like a mouthful of like green beans and potatoes and whatnot. And that, I absolutely love that. I mean, just the whole concept of them combining into something, you know, greater than themselves. And then since that obviously was the first time they had brought Devastator in, you know, he proceeded to kick a little butt.
Right, right.
And I loved that. Absolutely loved that. My least favorite, which again, well, I was pretty much in a routine. I was in front of the same TV, you know, with my same ET tray, except this time I was eating just a bowl of peas. I had a craving for peas and I had a can of peas. And, yes, I
You're
know.
So weird.
I was just eating peas. And I remember the episode. It was the one where Hound and Cliffjumper go scouting and they stumble across where the Decepticons are.
Mm.
And, you know, Hound is like, no, we got to go back and report this to Prime. And all of a sudden, Cliffjumper has this huge, bigger than anything the military would ever use, crazy scope, you know, and this cannon. And he's like, I got Megatron right in my optics. I'm like, yeah, dude, totally. You're like, and they even like had like the animation where like the crosshairs were there. Mm. Megatron wasn't moving. And Hound's like, no, we've got to go. And he's like, no. And he pulls the trigger. Megatron, from the first scene to the other scene, Megatron really didn't move much. And his shot completely whiffs. Like, I mean, he had his head lined up with this huge Autobot sniper rifle cannon thing.
Right, right.
And he totally whiffs. And that's the one where, you know, eject laser beak operation, kick their ass, and,
right,
you know,
right.
Hound goes into the thing. And I'm just thinking to myself, dude, how could you miss?
Maybe lasers are not really that reliable.
I don't know, but that to me because it'd be one thing if he just like pulled out his regular gun and, you know, took a pot shot and missed. But the fact that I had never seen anything like this in Transformers, like they normally, you know, just have their guns. They don't normally be like, let me assemble this tripod mounted super laser rocket launcher thing.
Right.
And I was mad. I had a mouthful of peas. And even at that age, I'm like, what the heck is this?
I can just see you doing that.
Yeah, like a little pea falls out of the left corner of my mouth and hits Elliot, you know, on the face.
See, you're worried more about plot points. To me, I was like, what's that? That's an animation error. Oh, come on. You know, like the one episode where I think it was season 3 when the animation started to go down the tank and there was the Soundwave, it was the Cord and Carnage in D or something like that. And there's this one shot of Soundwave looking up and Blaster flies by him, but Blaster is supposed to be in the background and they didn't overlap Soundwave's face. So then it looks like this little tiny Blaster flying by Soundwave. And I'm like, oh, come on. You're telling me you couldn't spend the extra two efforts to correct that animation?
And very sad. Done overseas, but yeah, I mean, I agree. That stuff I can overlook, You know, because I'm like, oh, all of a sudden Cliff Jumper is green for three frames.
Yeah,
right.
See, that stuff I noticed immediately. That was like in like the other one that was really notorious for bad animation errors was Muppet Babies.
On Super Friends, too.
Yeah, it was just like you would just all of a sudden you just like, oh, come on, I noticed that. I'm a kid. Why can't you fix that? So
I noticed it too, but yeah, to that I let go. But even then, even when I was a little kid, plot holes and stupid crap like that irritated me. So yeah, mouthful of peas, dripping pea juice and whatnot all over Elliot's little face on my little tray there. I'm like, what the hell is that?
I think that was one of the first episodes too. So
yeah, it was one of the earlier ones I remember. I was like, dude, if you missed with that, I've lost all faith in you, Cliff Jumper.
Yeah, so. The Autobots really had no shoot. Well, the Decepticons as well. So, but at least until the movie, then all of a sudden the Decepticons had terrific aim. The Autobots couldn't shoot anything.
Right.
All right. Well, that wraps up Transformers Podcast, the TFormers.com podcast for another week. And I want to thank all of our fans and all of our friends for listening. And once again, you could check us out at TFormers.com. And you could go there and join in the wonderful discussions in our new 3.0 community forums. And yeah, that's about it. So
yeah, well, next week, we'll probably have more people along again. So less bitching and moaning and more well-informed information.
Oh, let's go have the younger kids and less of us are cantankerous old folks here. So, but once again, thanks to all of our fans for our interest. It amazes me so I jump on Skype. People are like, are you doing the podcast today? Are you going to do the podcast? Yes, I'm doing the podcast today. So it's nice to feel so loved. So thank you all. And this
indeed.
Has been Iron High 1975.
That's the Piper.
Saying see you later, folks.
The boy's pheromone level suggests he wants to mate with the female.
The TFormers.com podcast is copyright 2009 TFormers.com. Special thanks to the Cleveland band Gravity for use of their music. Go check them out. MySpace.com/Gravity33. Check out our forums and leave your feedback or send us email at podcast@tformers.com. This has been an ENI production, all rights reserved.